improve, examining how paradoxical tensions shape evaluation practices in accreditation contexts. By Betty Onura, Abigail J. Fisher, Chian Wu, Shrutika Rajkumar, Sarek Shapagan, Judith Nasuna, David Rojas, and Latika Narula. Abstract. Introduction. Although program evaluation is increasingly routinized across academic health sciences, there is scant research on the factors that shape the scope and quality of evaluation work in health professions education. Our research addresses this gap by studying how the context in which evaluation is practiced influences the type of evaluation that can be conducted. Focusing on the context of accreditation, we critically examine the types of paradoxical tensions that surface as evaluation leads consider evaluation ideals or best practices in relation to contextual demands associated with accreditation seeking. Methods. Our methods were qualitative and situated within a critical realist paradigm. Study participants were 29 individuals with roles requiring responsibility and oversight on evaluation work. They worked across 4 regions within 26 academic health science institutions. Data were collected using semi-structured interviews and analyzed using framework and matrix analyses. Results. We identified 3 overarching themes. 1. Absence of collective coherence about evaluation practice, 2. Disempowerment of expertise, and 3. Tensions as routine practice. Examples of these latter tensions in evaluation work included 1. Resourcing accreditation versus resourcing robust evaluation strategy, performing paradox. 2. Evaluation designs to secure accreditation versus design to spur renewal and transformation, performing learning paradox. And 3. Public dissemination of evaluation findings versus restricted or selective access, publicizing paradox. Subthemes and illustrative data are presented. Discussion. Our study demonstrates how the high-stakes context of accreditation seeking surfaces tensions that can risk the quality and credibility of evaluation practices. To mitigate these risks, those who commission or execute evaluation work must be able to identify and reconcile these tensions. We propose strategies that may help optimize the quality of evaluation work alongside accreditation seeking efforts. Critically, our research highlights the limitations of continually positioning evaluation purely as a method versus as a socio-technical practice that is highly vulnerable to contextual influences. Introduction. Program evaluation is becoming ubiquitous in health professions education, HPE, for both small-scale programs and larger institutional initiatives. This routinization of evaluation is driven in part by the rationale that it is a valuable driver of quality improvement, or further still, a mechanism for maintaining credibility, supporting public accountability, and driving societal improvement. These are noble aspirations. Nevertheless, there have been numerous critiques as to whether prevailing evaluation practices in HPE are sufficient for realizing espoused goals. For example, scholars have expressed concerns about issues such as the undue dominance of select outcome-focused models in the field and frequent neglect of evaluative scrutiny of implementation, as well as about persistently narrow scope in the focus of evaluation questions. Almost invariably, scholarly critiques of evaluation in HPE are accompanied by calls to action via adoption of new or broader methodologies and frameworks for evaluation. Indeed, such calls for methodological expansion in evaluation inquiry in HPE have persisted through the past decade. However, they have not been matched by a significant parallel evolution in the methodological diversity of evaluation studies in the field. Indeed, many contemporary evaluation approaches have yet to be adopted or gain solid traction in the field. This hesitant evolution suggests that not only is an emphasis of methodological renewal as a solution to the expressed evaluation challenges inadequate, but also that such emphasis may also contribute to the under-examination of entrenched barriers to transforming evaluation practices. Specifically, situating limitations to the conduct of evaluation as purely technical or methodological constrains the field of examination of evaluation as a complex social practice that is subject to a plurality of socio-political interest. Such interests must be subjected to empirical scrutiny in order to meaningfully understand the constraints or tensions shaping evaluation practice. Correspondingly, our research aims to illuminate these tensions and explore how they influence the scope and quality of evaluation work in academic health science systems. Research on the socio-political tensions associated with evaluation work has tended to focus on the pressure on evaluators. For example, a heuristic model of this construct places emphasis on the diverse ways in which stakeholder groups can exert influence on evaluation leads, specifically by contributing variably to the betterment, undermining, support, or distortion Busty model of evaluation processes in either direct or indirect ways. Other research has explored how the stakes inherent to an evaluation context influence the way in which evaluation is conducted. Azam et al. Simulated a scenario study to explore how stakeholder decision-making was influenced in high-stakes versus low-stakes contexts. High-stakes contexts are those where evaluation findings are utilized to inform decisions with consequential material impacts, such as resource allocation or program continuity. Their findings illustrated that high-stakes environments were more likely to reduce reliance on technically appropriate measures and increase adoption of more politically sensitive approaches to evaluation. Taken together, the outline research provides evidence on how contextual demands, specifically planned utilization of evaluation work, and direct and indirect stakeholder pressures shape the ways in which evaluation is conducted. By design, however, this research is broadly framed and does not expound on specific types of issues that can trigger varying demands and pressures on evaluation. This lack of specification creates a translational gap whereby the theory appears abstract or disconnected from the day-to-day realities of evaluation work. Moreover, it contributes to the oversimplification of the pressures on evaluation, example, as either positive or negative, which mischaracterizes the complexity of decision-making inherent to evaluation work. Correspondingly, more sophisticated theoretical models are needed to provide meaningful scrutiny of the types of concerns or issues that underlie recurrent tensions in evaluation practices. In this study, we draw on the organizational paradox theory in our exploration of recurrent tensions that characterize evaluation practice within the context of accreditation-seeking institutions within the academic health science system. Next, we provide a brief overview of this theoretical lens, followed by a detailed description of the study context in our methodological overview. 1.1. Paradox theory and paradoxical tensions. We identified paradox theory as a valuable framework for examining tensions that are inherent to the reality of organizations. Paradoxical tensions are defined as opposing elements of potential choices that appear separately logical but are seemingly irrational when juxtaposed. Paradoxical tensions have thus far been classified into four overarching categories. Examples include learning paradoxes, which surface when tensions arise between investing in innovation and maintaining ongoing operations, performing paradoxes, which manifest via tensions about how to meet competing needs of key interest groups in an organization. Example, consider faculty versus learners in HPE. Belonging paradoxes, which manifest in tensions about identity. And organizing paradoxes, which surface intentions about how to structure institutional functions. Example, creating room for evaluators versus pre-existing institutional structure. Notably, different paradoxical tensions can intersect in complex ways. In contrast to other ways of viewing tensions, example, as resolvable dilemmas, paradoxical tensions are relatively permanent features of organizational life that cannot be wholly resolved or eliminated. Thus, long-term sustainability demands upon continuous efforts to manage the seemingly disparate elements of the tension. One element cannot be perpetually prioritized over the other without threats to sustainability. Overall, paradox theory provides a valuable framework, lending clarity and cohesion to the study of tensions across diverse domains. Though its use is uncommon in HPE, it has been applied recently in European contexts to examine tensions between service and training in surgical education, and to examine tensions that arise in hospital accreditation systems. Herein, we focus on the evaluation practices with the central research question. What paradoxical tensions are encountered in the routine practice of evaluation within accredited or accreditation-seeking institutions? Methodology. We adopted a qualitative approach that is situated within a critical realist paradigm. This paradigm positions knowledge as constituting a material reality that exists independently of individual perceptions, while acknowledging an inherent subjectivity to knowledge production. Critical realism thus integrates a realist ontology about a reality on which there can be diverse perspectives, with a constructivist epistemology about the construction of knowledge. Critical realism is well aligned optimally with our theoretical paradox theory and analytical choices, framework, and matrix analyses. As we situate paradoxical tensions that manifest via participant data as empirical reflections of the actual social and structural institutional reality within which they work. 2.1. Study context and population. This study is situated within the context of accreditation seeking in the academic health sciences. Accreditation is generally defined as formalized process via which programs or institutions are systematically compared against designated standards of high quality performance that have been designed by regulatory bodies. Thus, it is quintessentially a high-stakes context as information obtained via various evaluative strategies within this environment can be used to inform subsequent decisions about whether institutions are determined to meet accreditation standards. Though recent research studies have explored the challenges associated with accreditation processes, there is scant research focus on the scope, quality, or indeed tensions inherent to the practice of evaluation in this environment. After the research question, our study population was evaluation leads, which we defined as individuals who lead or support evaluation activities as a core or assigned responsibility of their employment within the academic health sciences. These evaluation leads were all situated within academic health science systems that encompassed university health science faculties, academic hospitals, and affiliated teaching hospitals across four high-income countries: Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, and the USA. Data were collected from June to August 2021. Ethical approval of this project was granted by University of Toronto Ethics Board under Protocol Reference 37695. 2.2. Data collection tools. Data were collected using both 1. A demographic survey and 2. A semi-structured interview. Our demographic survey was designed to collect information about individuals' institutional affiliations and work role, as well as socio-demographic data about age, racialized status, and gender identity. This survey included diverse response options for the latter categories. The demographic survey was completed by participants after the interview. We also developed a semi-structured interviewed guide that included multiple guiding questions about participants' evaluation practices and their experience with tensions in day-to-day work. Each question was accompanied by multiple potential probing questions. Examples of these questions posed include the following. Reflecting on your evaluation projects over the past few years, have there been situations where you experienced tensions among stakeholders? And have you ever been in a situation where you were concerned about the ethics of what you were being asked to do as an evaluator? 2.3, sampling recruitment and data collection. We employed a purposive and convenient sampling strategy to recruit participants for our study. Purposive sampling involves the identification of potential participants for research studies by prioritizing the selection of individuals or groups who are likely to be rich sources of information given their deep knowledge or experience with the phenomenon of interest. It can be complemented by elements of convenient sampling such as availability and willingness to participate. To identify potential participants, we first developed a sampling frame, a database of individuals from the target population of diverse evaluation leads in the academic health sciences. Our sampling frame was populated in several ways. First, we searched publicly available information online via using LinkedIn and Google searches of university and hospital websites to identify individuals whose role titles or biographical descriptions fit our selection criteria. Second, we contacted professional evaluation societies, American Evaluation Association, European Evaluation Association, and Australian Evaluation Society, and requested distribution of our study recruitment emails to their members. Third, the research team members were asked to generate names of potential contacts who might meet selection criteria. Finally, recruitment messages were posted online via the Twitter accounts of members of the research team. Research assistants reviewed the sampling frame iteratively to ensure that it included a broad range of potential participants across regions and institutions. Potential participants were either contacted directly via recruitment emails or engaged once they expressed their interest in participating, once learning about the study via the alternative means outlined above. They were then emailed an informed consent form and a link to an online scheduling software where they could indicate their preferred time slot for participation in the semi-structured interview. Once these interviews were scheduled, participants were sent formal email calendar invitations that included a link to online meeting software. All interviews were conducted virtually and recorded digitally via Zoom prior to the data being uploaded to a secure server. Audio recordings were initially transcribed using InVivo's artificial intelligence transcription technology. Thereafter, transcriptions underwent review by research assistants to clarify, organize, and anonymize content. 2.4, participant demographics. Overall, 29 individuals from 26 different institutions across four regions, Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, and the USA, participated in our study. The completion rate for the demographic survey was 96.6%. Participants included 8 who self-identified as men and 20 who identified as women. No participants identified with other gender identity options presented. Examples: trans woman, trans man, non-binary, two-spirit, and unsure or questioning. Participants' mean age was 47.33 years. Only 5 participants identified as racialized, 20 did not, and 3 either were unsure or preferred not to say. Racialized here refers to individuals who are ascribed a racial or cultural identity by traditionally dominant or privileged or predominant groups based on their ethnicity, ancestry, or color of their skin. We use racialized here instead of race to emphasize the social construction of race. No participants identified as indigenous. Participants had worked in evaluation for an average of 11 years. 75% of them also had faculty appointments. Several participants had both university and hospital affiliations. 21.4% were solely hospital affiliated, and 25% were solely university affiliated. 2.5, analytic approach. We employed both framework and matrix analyses in this study. Framework analysis generally involves the thematic or case-based coding of qualitative data in relation to a pre-existing set of codes or ideas to identify distinctive or recurrent patterns in the data. These deductive processes of inference can be complemented by inductive processes, whereby the researcher observes and codes for data that are not represented by the a priori framework. Matrix analysis involves the use of matrices to identify and delineate relationships across two or more elements of dimensions of a set of data. These matrices help in examining how two or more categories interrelate to explain phenomenon or interest or relate to theoretical concepts. Leveraging the analytical tools of critical realism means that such analysis includes abductive inferences as well, whereby the researcher moves between theory and data, identifying and reconceptualizing data that are beyond initial theoretical premises, thus expanding on existing theory. The initial framework analysis was part of a broader ongoing study that involved analysis of the paradoxical tensions inherent to evaluation work more broadly, not specific to accreditation. Early analysis for the study involved coding the data in relation to a framework of codes informed by the paradox theory concepts. Codes were then iteratively applied to the transcripts, and several of the inductive codes were organized into thematic chunks that included, but were not exclusive to, overarching paradox categories. Through this initial analysis, we identified the unique influence that accreditation has on the tensions experienced by our participant population. Correspondingly, we focus our analysis here and on examining the evaluation tensions in an accreditation context. We use matrix analysis to refine the delineation of paradoxical tensions under the overarching paradox categories. This included grouping code categories or early themes within matrices to identify where existing codes might intersect. For example, we could use a 2x2 matrix with data on learning tensions and performing tensions on both axes to allow visualization, comparison, and refinement of intersecting data or codes, thus identifying the existence of unique tensions. Intersecting codes and emerging tensions were reviewed iteratively using this matrix approach to identify points of divergence and convergence and specify subtensions underlying broader or overarching tensions. Through abductive analysis, we map data on evaluation tensions that were inconsistent with the initial codes on paradoxical tensions, working to extend existing theory by considering if or when the conceptualization of new overarching categories of paradoxical tensions may be required. Through reflexive discussion among team members, we collated analyzed data into a discrete set of tensions that optimally illustrated both breadth and depth in surface tensions about evaluation in an accreditation context. InVivo 12 was utilized as a data management tool. Results. Our findings are organized into two sections. First, Part 1 presents overarching themes from our framework analysis findings. Next, Part 2 presents a detailed delineation of paradoxical evaluation tensions from our matrix analysis findings along with supporting data extracts. Part 1, Framework Analysis. We surface themes that illustrate three overarching narratives about evaluation practice within the health profession's accreditation-seeking context. Number 1, absence of collective coherence about evaluation. Evaluation work was generally characterized as a poorly understood practice. Resoundingly, evaluation leads reporting practicing in settings where there were limited collective coherence or shared understanding about the aims, methodologies, values, or utility of evaluation. The following are quotes from our participants. I'm not sure how, what the depth of understanding of people is around evaluation. There is still a thought that evaluation just means at the end of a session you hand a piece of paper to a bunch of students and they tick a bunch of boxes and everyone's happy, and that's enough. Participant 15. I will repeat some of my frustration at people who really lack of knowledge of evaluation and just think they can slap something on a piece of paper and I can magically make it useful. Participant 1. Number 2, disempowerment of expert practice. Evaluation leads often reported working in environments where the expertise required to lead evaluation work was undervalued. One participant stated, evaluation is really underappreciated as an actual field of expertise. It requires the training and understanding and experience. I would love if we could actually hire someone for who evaluation is something I do rather than evaluation is something I can do. Participant 21. Notably, there were reports of being excluded from decision-making tables where they could influence strategic action on evaluation practice. The following is a quote from Participant 8. I'm technically in the executive leadership of organization, but because I'm the evaluator, they don't invite me to the cool kids table. Participant 8. Number 3, paradoxical tensions as routine to evaluation practice. We found that several tensions surface routinely across participants' evaluation work. These tensions are elaborated on in Part 2. Part 2, matrix analysis. Our analysis surfaced 4 overarching categories of paradoxical tensions, which include a new category of paradox, the publicizing paradox. A. Performing paradoxes for evaluation in accreditation context. Performing paradoxes arose when evaluation leads had to reconcile the demands of enacting accreditation evaluation with seemingly conflicting priorities. 1. Resourcing accreditation versus resourcing evaluation. Accreditation activity was perceived as commanding much of the overall attention and resources available for evaluation. Correspondingly, other types of evaluation work were under-resourced or deprioritized. The following is a quote from Participant 12. A lot of our work is driven by meeting those accreditation standards. I have to say, there's not a lot of time or personnel to go beyond that very much. Participant 12. B. Performing learning paradoxes. The performing tension, noted above, was associated with subsequent tensions. Specifically, performing evaluation to meet accreditation demands was seemingly at odds with investing in evaluation for learning, in evaluation strategies that could generate deeper or new insights about program functioning. Specific examples of how this tension manifests in evaluation work include the following. 1. Design to guarantee accreditation versus to surface dysfunctional elements, desirable findings. The pressure to produce data that would guarantee accreditation skewed the scope of evaluation strategy towards surfacing positive features of the programs, thus limiting scrutiny about less optimal aspects of the interventions. The following is a quote from Participant 10. A lot of the push towards accreditation is you want to show your program in the most positive light and highlight what it does well. And good evaluation sometimes also reveals challenges, things that are not happening. So I think that can be a tension on those of us who are doing evaluation work, because it can impact even thinking about front-end evaluation questions and planning. Participant 10. 2. Summative outcome verification versus comprehensive evaluation strategy. disproportionate attention was seen to be directed towards summative evaluation, outcome verification, in lieu of more comprehensive or theoretically informed evaluation strategy. The following is a quote from participant 30. This is not about a smiley sheet from a student, right? Everyone circles 4. And again, we do that because there's an accreditation requirement. But we have yet to unleash utilization-focused evaluation, developmental evaluation, and principal-focused evaluation. We have not unleashed the power of those frameworks to help drive change in our system. Participant 30. Similarly, there were concerns that evaluation of a program implementation work was often not considered within accreditation evaluation mandates. The following is a quote from participant 8. When I see the evaluation used in accrediting documents, they're really just saying outcomes. As we know, the outcomes can only really be as good as the implementation that got it there. Participant 8. Evaluation leads were well aware of the need for value of exploring more complex evaluation questions about how or why various outcomes were obtained. However, because their institutions embodied outcome verification of accreditation standards as their performance goal for evaluation, evaluators in this context encountered significant constraints to practicing evaluation in ways that prioritize learning. The following are quotes from our participants. IT, accreditation, has really shifted the way an evaluator functions. We're spending all of our energy and effort worrying about meeting that standard without really asking why. Participant 2. There was a national evaluation that I was doing looking at accreditation standards. And when I came back to them, with what I felt was really important finding, cultural, environmental, and resource barriers, they weren't really interested in hearing about those aspects. For some of them, they just wanted to know, were the sites able to do it, yes or no? Not how well they were able to do it, or why some worked and others didn't. Participant 9. C. Publicizing paradoxes. Selective access versus broad dissemination. Publicizing paradoxes surface in tension about whether to restrict access to evaluation data to select internal audiences or to make evaluation findings publicly available to all interest groups. More comprehensive evaluation strategies can involve sourcing evaluation data from select stakeholders or interest groups, example, faculty, that are, however, in relevance to broader stakeholders or interest groups. Herein, attention arose about whether data should be publicly accessible or whether access should be restricted to a select group. The following is a quote from participant 3. We want student leadership to be fully aware of things, but at the same time, we don't want students to see the results from some evaluations. That's really for the faculty only. So, you know, that can be awkward. Participant 3. D. Learning performing publicizing paradox. We identified the learning performing publicizing tension at the juncture of interacting pressures of trying to protect certain evaluative data from public scrutiny, publicizing, so as not to compromise an institution's accreditation performing while still striving to collect and use said data because it is recognized as a valuable driver of program or system level change, learning. The quote below illustrates how an evaluation lead navigated investing in evaluation focused on driving learning while navigating interacting constraints associated with publicizing and performing tensions. They wanted to make sure that the data that we were collecting on programs wasn't going to go to an accrediting body, and then therefore they would be dinged if the accrediting body got the information. So we had to be very careful with the privacy components of it and ensure that we gain the trust of the programs and the chairs to say, you're a part of the evaluation, but that is separate from the accreditation data. Participant 16. Discussion. This research provides a novel exploration of how the accreditation context shapes evaluation practices across the academic health science system. More broadly, the findings relate to research on accreditation that highlights the complexity and ambivalence that is often associated with accreditation-seeking activities. For example, researchers have surfaced both positive, example, improvements of programs and policies, increased engagement and accountability, and negative, examples, cumbersome documentation, labor costs, and inadequate training, impacts of accreditation on medical school faculty and operations. Pertinently, scholars have also tried to situate accreditation as a social practice, some conceptualizing accreditation as a unique regulatory process different from program evaluation or quality assurance or improvement practices. Regardless of how accreditation is positioned, however, our research highlights the significant constraints that accreditation seeking imposes on evaluation work, including how it constrains the scope, quality, public availability, and thus utility of evaluation work. Critically, the study provides evidence about the insufficiency of calls for methodological renewal or promotion of newer evaluation methods as a mean by which to enrich evaluation practice in health professions education. Indeed, our findings suggest that evaluation leads routinely desire or recommend richer evaluation inquiry and broader methods in their practice. However, these efforts towards expansion of evaluation methodology and scope have been experienced as unwelcome, under-resourced, deprioritized, or even actively dismissed. Instead, energies and efforts are heavily oriented towards engaging evaluative devices that will guarantee the prevailing performance objective accreditation is attained. This state of affairs appears somewhat counterproductive as it is associated with cynicism and distrust about the credibility of the evaluative inquiry used to determine accreditation merit. Undeniably, the system verification of specified intervention outcomes that is demanded via accreditation seeking is one of the core responsibilities of competent evaluation practice. However, it is just one among a host of equally vital responsibilities for competent and robust evaluation strategy. These other responsibilities for evaluation include evaluation of implementation, ethical and reflective evaluation practice, emancipatory and equity-conscious practices, and navigating technical feasibility and social accountability concerns. When the latter evaluation functions are neglected, there are potentially problematic implications for institutional functioning. Indeed, paradox theorists warn that institutions cannot perpetually overinvest in one element of attention, example, meeting specified performance target, at the expense of another, example, learning and renewal, without compromising their enduring success or sustainability. Examples from our findings illustrate that the risks that unreconciled tensions can pose. For example, learning is at risk when proving the accomplishment of an accreditation standard via superficial outcome verification occasions the dismissal of all other types of evaluative approaches. Example that can scrutinize key variabilities in implementation. Equity is at risk when securing information or privacy for select or consistently more powerful interest groups is routinely upheld at the expense of publicly sharing information in ways that invite the critical insights of diverse interest groups. Moreover, both learning and equity are at risk when the pressure of potentially failing to meet an accreditation standard can compel institutions to minimize evaluation that may yield potentially undesirable findings or compromise transparency and public accountability. 4.1. Implications for practice in future research. Our findings herein raise questions about how both accreditation granting and accreditation seeking institutions can better manage these evaluation tensions and adopt credible, robust processes of inquiry. Such effort is indicated by the finding that there's skepticism about the credibility of the processes of evaluative inquiry used to determine accreditation merit among the very people tasked with leading such inquiries. Notably, the skepticism about the credibility of accreditation processes has also been found in research among some faculty and learners, and in research attending to limitations in criteria used to establish accreditation standards. Correspondingly, institutions should be practically and ethically motivated to invest in ensuring that they can uphold public trust in the credibility of accreditation processes and decisions. Optimistically, there are several strategies that have been proposed to support better management of paradoxical tensions more broadly. Acceptance, for example, involves appreciation of the divergent arms of attention. For example, making institutional leaders aware of longer-term costs or of overinvesting in a singular evaluation strategy while acknowledging the inherent pressures and necessity of accreditation can help minimize defensiveness while inviting creative considerations and alternatives. Other strategies involve intentional separation of work processes or efforts associated with evaluation for accreditation and more robust evaluation approaches. This separation can be spatial. Example, whereby there are distributed or distinct organizational units working in service of different elements of attention. Or temporal, example, where there are distinct time periods spent focused on accreditation evaluation versus other evaluation work. Yet another strategy is synthesis, whereby institutions can strive to identify and capitalize on similarities across competing elements of attention. Example, capitalizing on accreditation requirements to design more meaningful, expansive approach for some issues and limiting effort on disjointed priorities. The use of synthesis as a strategy would have the best chance of success if, as Young et al. Suggest, there can be a collaborative educational alliance among medical schools, accrediting authorities, and relevant regulatory bodies or academic societies that is characterized by trust, mutual feedback, and accommodation of sociocultural variabilities in relation to accreditation standards. Opportunities for lower stakes evaluative efforts along with remedial opportunities of or recognition of corrective progress could also help cultivate trusting cross-institutional alliances. Further research can assess or explore if how the aforementioned strategies can be leveraged to enrich the scope and quality of evaluative inquiry within accreditation context. Broad capacity building in evaluation practice examples via faculty or professional development may be helpful in cultivating collective coherence about evaluation tensions and possibilities and can help spur collaborative problem solving about evaluation practices in this context. 4.2, conclusion, strengths, and limitations. Accreditation seeking places significant constraints on how evaluation is practiced across academic health science systems. Evaluation work that is in service of learning, evolution, equity, and transparency can be inherently at odds with a sustained singular evaluative focus on outcome verification for accreditation. Despite cognizance of these issues among evaluation leads, they often lack the occupational status or institutional power to drive decision-making about evaluative inquiry towards more comprehensive, robust strategies. Meaningful change to the evaluation landscape requires institutional acknowledgement of how accreditation seeking may limit the quality and credibility of evaluative inquiry, as well as a concerted political will to course correct is needed. This novel inquiry attends to the experiences of evaluation leads working in academic health sciences across within these three continents, lending credibility to claims of commonalities in how accreditation influences evaluation practices. Nevertheless, all participant settings are within high to middle income nations. Identified tensions may vary or have more adverse impacts in more resource-constrained settings.